Welcome, little children, to today's study for April 29th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 18:14 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you once again. And may we begin with our proverb for the day, which is from Proverbs 16, verses 9 and 10 of the Ward Green version from 2003. And it reads, "A man's earnest heart may determine his way, but footsteps are straight from Jehovah, they say. God's word fills the lips of a king. His judgment, no error, will bring." That was our proverb for today, April 29th, 2024 of the Common Era. Our study, when we mentioned yesterday the scarab of Thutmose IV, it was discovered at Hazor, and I've done my due diligence and looked up that it says in part 1 of the Crucible, chapter 5, paragraph 10, specifically, in fact, that the scarab is said to have been stratified so as to fall about 1400 to 1300 BCE. About, it's approximate. So it does fall within the range of 1414 to 1407, or slightly outside that range, but because it's an approximate, well, it doesn't matter. As long as the scarab was discovered in a place which was at least as late as 1414. Because there wouldn't have been a scarab of the pharaoh prior to his becoming pharaoh. So if the pharaoh dates to 1414 in our chronology, and it was discovered in a layer of earth stratified in such a way as to date to about 1400 or somewhat later, that's perfect, because it would take possibly some time for it to fall into the stratification, whether it was at the time the person dies or whatever. So it's a perfect alignment, or close enough. You know, there's no contradiction, let's say. Now, today's study in the Crucible says no other chronology has been discovered to date as true as this, our Holy Grail. As I said, the Holy Grail is an expression that was used by biblical archaeologists as their description of the biblical chronology, the chronology of the Bible. It was the Holy Grail of biblical archaeology to try to get the chronology. And so this is what we have got, is the Holy Grail. The genealogy is the Holy Grail. It's the only crucible of its kind. There's nothing else like it. When I was discovering all these things about the genealogy, it was one day at a time, and I discovered things piecemeal, one thing at a time. But at the beginning, of course, there was a lot of turmoil and changes. But then after the article Green, it solidified quite a bit. And then, it was one immense discovery after another. There's no other chronology like this, where eclipses are found to corroborate, you know, correlating the information. In so many cases, everything is found, which you don't find in any other chronology. In fact, when you use the other chronologies and seek to find the confirmations, you don't find them. You don't find the necessary eclipses, or you don't find these things, or they might base it all on one eclipse, but they don't accommodate all the lunar phase information or any of the other planetary information. You know, everything has to be accounted for. Not that I've done all the research that needs or could be done or needs to be done. You know, obviously there's a lot more research that could be done. But because of the immensely greater success of this chronology, it's just overwhelming. Whilst a very large number of attempts based on a shorter sojourn of Israel in Egypt have failed, as far as chronologies, it has been found, as far as chronologies go, that the 430 years fits better for the sojourn of Israel in Egypt in the ways we have given. We've talked about this in this article already, I believe, but I mean, certainly we're going to see that in any other article in the series of the genealogical articles. You'll see this discussion coming up again and again. The article now in quotes, "The Duration of the Israelites' Sojourn in Egypt," end quote, by Paul J. Ray Jr., has a balanced assessment of arguments on both sides. On both sides. I'm choking because it's a tickle in my throat of some kind. It's early morning for me, actually, even though it's late in the day. I've been getting to bed so late at night, early, or even late in the morning sometimes, but early in the morning. I got a good sleep today, something like 8 hours, I think. Very good, so. But, you know, my throat, you know, everything, the need to clear my throat is partly a consequence of how long I've been awake. "The Duration of the Israelite Sojourn in Egypt" by Paul J. Ray Jr. has a balanced assessment of arguments on both sides and favors the long duration. There's one example of someone who favors the long duration. "We do not claim the only true chronology, just one." In other words, but the problem with all the other chronologies available is they don't have any claim to be true. They just can't meet that standard of being true. They don't fit the facts. So even though ours, we don't say it's the only chronology, it's the only one that we know of, certainly, that is true. So we claim one true chronology. "During the days of Joshua, when Israel crossed the Jordan as a nation." I mean, Jehovah claims to be the only true God. It might be blasphemous to assert that there possibly is another true God. That would be rather unlikely to imagine or contemplate. But we're still not going to claim that our chronology is the only one. "During the days of Joshua, when Israel crossed the Jordan as a nation to enter the Promised Land for the first time," Joshua 3, verses 13 to 15, "Joshua had already prophesied beforehand that the instant that the soles of the priest's feet would rest in the waters of the Jordan River, specifically those priests who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant, the waters of the Jordan would be cut off and stand as one dam," and the Bible records that this did really take place at the very instant foretold, as the feet of these priests were dipped into the edge of the waters, a dam having been caused to rise at Adam at a distance up the Jordan River. The Jordan has been known to be dammed up in modern times by mudslides caused by earthquakes, as is generally known thanks to research by Mr. Amos Neuer of Stanford University and Mr. Ziev, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Riquez? Riches of the Weizmann Institute of Israel. These scientists determined a strike-slip fault zone from a July 11, 1927 CE earthquake 5 kilometers from Jericho to the Dead Sea, and Mr. Neuer connected mudslides with quakes. The falling of the walls of Jericho was attributed also by Mr. Neuer to an earthquake, since they fell in one direction. The Bible has a detailed account, as much to be preferred. "Then the people shouted when they proceeded to blow the horns, and it came about that as soon as the people heard the sound of the horn and the people began to shout a great war cry, then the wall began to fall down flat. After that, the people went up into the city, each one straight before him, and captured the city." That's the end of our study for today in the Crucible article. The book of Nehemiah, chapter 5. After the chapter we just read yesterday concerning the building of the wall, However, it says now in Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 1, however, there came to be a great outcry of the people and their wives against their Jewish brothers. And there were those who were saying, our sons and our daughters we are giving as security that we may get grain and eat and keep alive. In the study Bible, it says, we are many with our sons and our daughters. We must get grain in order to eat and stay alive. It's a different, somewhat different rendering of that. And there were those who were saying, our fields and our vineyards and our houses, we are giving a security that we may get grain during the food shortage. And the study Bible says we are giving our fields and our vineyards and our houses as security to get grain during the food shortage. Very similar. Verse 4, and there were those who were saying we have borrowed money for the king's tribute on our fields and our vineyards. And now our flesh is the same as the flesh of our brothers. Our sons are the same as their sons. But here we are reducing our sons and our daughters to slaves. There are some of our daughters already reduced, and there is no power in our hands, while our fields and our vineyards belong to others. Nehemiah writes, now, I became very angry as soon as I heard their outcry and these words. So my heart took consideration within me, and I began finding fault with the nobles and the deputy rulers, and went on to say to them, usury is what you are exacting, each one from his own brother. Further, I arranged a great assembly on their account, and I proceeded to say to them, we ourselves have bought back our own Jewish brothers who were sold to the nations, as far as it was in our power. And at the same time, will you yourselves sell your own brothers? And must they be sold to us? At this they became speechless, and they did not find a word. And I went on to say, the thing that you are doing is not good. Is it not in the fear of our God that you should walk because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies? And also I, my brothers, and my attendants are giving money and grain on loan among them. Let us please leave off this lending on interest. Please restore to them on this day their fields, their vineyards, their olive groves, and their houses, and the hundredths of the money and the grain, the new wine, and the oil that you are exacting as interest from them. To this they said, we shall make a restoration. And from them we shall ask nothing back. We shall do precisely as you are saying. Then Nehemiah writes, so I called the priests and made them swear to do according to this word. Also my bosom I shook out and then said, the bosom is the chest. Right, he shook out his upper garments, or whatever you would say. And then said, in this manner may the true God shake out from this house and from his acquired property every man that does not carry out this word, and in this manner may he become shaken out and empty. To this all the congregation said, Amen. And they began to praise Yahweh, and the people proceeded to do according to this word. Another thing, from the day that he commissioned me to become their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes the king, there's the chronological information in verse 14. From the 20th year to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes the king, and Artaxerxes Longimanus is the only king who could fit that description of having ruled 32 years during this time period, with Nehemiah having been the successor to Ezra in his commission to return from Babylon, and also it having been mentioned that Ezra went up in the seventh year of a king also named Artaxerxes, right? But this is the 20th year, and it was the 20th year in which Nehemiah went up, and he's saying here in verse 14, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes the king, 12 years, I myself and my brothers did not eat the bread due the governor. He didn't eat the bread due to the governor, and he was the governor. As for the former governors that were prior to me, so he apparently took over Now, whether Ezra had been governor or whether the prior governor was... we know that a long time, or sometime, what is it, 80, we said, years? 80 years previous to Ezra, we had said there was a governor called Zerubbabel, but we don't know who the governors were, all of the governors intervening. As for the former governors that were prior to me, Nehemiah writes, they had made it heavy upon the people, and they kept taking from them for bread and wine daily, 40 silver shekels. But from this 32nd year of Artaxerxes, that's how he's identified as Artaxerxes Longimanus the First, who is the king who succeeded Xerxes. And Xerxes was the king who succeeded Darius the Great, during whose reign the temple was completed, during his sixth year, as we've already seen. Also, their attendants themselves domineered over the people. That's the former governors. Their attendants, Nehemiah writes, domineered over their representatives, that themselves domineered over the people. As for me, I did not do that way on account of the fear of God. And what is more, in the work of this wall I took a hand, and not a field did we acquire, and all my attendants were collected together there for the work. And the Jews and the deputy rulers, 150 men, and those coming into us from the nations that were around us, were at my table. As for that which happened to be made ready daily, one bull, six select sheep and birds were made ready for me, and once every 10 days every sort of wine in abundance. And along with this, the bread due the governor I did not demand, because the service upon this people was heavy. He didn't demand any recompense for his service as governor from the people. Do remember for me, O my God, for good, all that I have done in behalf of this people. That's the end of Nehemiah chapter 5, and that was verse 19, the last verse of that chapter. Now, when we read the next reading, which should be Esther chapter 1, you might want to look at the Greek Septuagint version of this book of Esther. It includes a dream, a vision, or a dream experienced by Mordecai. He saw a vision, and all of that is part of verse 1. And then verse 1 continues at the point at which we're going to begin reading in the Protestant Bible, but this is the Greek Septuagint that includes a preamble in the book of Esther. In chapter 1, specifically verse 1, is made much longer, and it includes this. It even includes the genealogy of Mordecai. And it says he saw a vision, okay? And that was why it says Haman had a vendetta against Mordecai. That's from the Greek Septuagint version, but the Protestant version, which is what we're reading today, in this version it says, now it came about in the days of Ahasuerus. By the way, only recently was it discovered, and more recently, while the older commentators have, or previous commentators had said that Ahasuerus was Artaxerxes Longimanus in the book of Esther, this king, it was discovered later, the name Ahasuerus is the same word as Xerxes, and it's also translated as Ahasuerus from the original Persian. It's either Ahasuerus or Xerxes, so it's now believed that this Ahasuerus was Xerxes the First, the son of Darius, who ruled after Darius the Great. Now it came about in the days of Ahasuerus, that is, the Ahasuerus who was ruling as king from India to Ethiopia, over 127 jurisdictional districts. This being written in the Greek Septuagint after the vision of Mordecai, that in those days, as King Ahasuerus was sitting upon his royal throne, which was in Shushan the castle, in the third year of his reigning, He held a banquet for all his princes and his servants. Oh, yes. Before I don't want to forget anything. But I've realized that this, the pain that I had in my baby finger and that part of my hand, it's actually almost gone now, but it was a repetitive stress injury of my left hand from the keyboard, oppressing the command or the shift key. You know, you get these occasional repetitive stress injuries from typing on the keyboard, and that's what it was. I believe totally harmless kind of, or temporary injury. In the third year of his reigning, in those days, as King Ahasuerus was sitting upon his royal throne, which was in Shushan the castle, in the third year of his reigning, he held a banquet for all his princes and servants, the military force of Persia and Media, the nobles and the princes of the jurisdictional districts before himself, when he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the honor and the beauty of his greatness for many days, 180 days. Excuse me. I also want to mention about, I just had a bit of gas there. Had a small amount of breakfast, not much today. But I had a good sleep last night, and I wanted to mention, in the vitamin C, the little spoon they give you, if you look closely, it says 5 cc's, which I realized only just yesterday that means, obviously, it means it's 1 teaspoon. But in the directions, it says a half teaspoon is equivalent to 2,000 milligrams. And I took 2 of these little spoonfuls. Now, in the past, I'm not sure if I was taking 1 or 2 when I was taking the vitamin C. I won't be able to remember that right now. But I know that when I had the sore throat recently, I took 2 of them 3 times, which would be, since one of them is a full teaspoon, one of them is 4 milligrams evidently, 4,000 milligrams or 4 grams, I mean, 4 grams. And so I was taking 2, that's 8 grams, and I did that 3 times, that's 24 grams plus the 2 grams I was taking on that day as a regular vitamin C quantity of consumption. I consumed 28 or 26 grams, I should say 26 grams, and the sore throat went away, right? But I've always said 2 grams every 20 minutes, but I took 8 grams every 20 minutes, just to be clear. And that's what I've possibly been doing that all along. I'm not sure if I've been taking 2 of those, though, every time, or just 1. For some reason, the last time I took 2 of them each time. But it worked perfectly well, and I didn't even get diarrhea. A little bit of slight diarrhea the next day. Nothing. But I knew when the sore throat goes away. You just feel it. You don't have a sore throat anymore, and you feel like you don't need to take any more vitamin C, and that's how you can use vitamin C to cure any infection. You'll never have a sore throat or a cold or flu that becomes a full-blown sickness if you use vitamin C in that way. It has the capability of destroying the infection, even if it's viral. It doesn't matter if it's viral or microbial, whatever, you know, bacterial. It makes no difference what kind of, and food poisoning is the same thing. It's a type of bacterial infection. It would work, it does work on that, although I don't think I've had food poisoning recently. But yes, I mean, you get food poisoning from rice that's been sitting on the stove that wasn't reheated recently, that was not put in the fridge, that you didn't refrigerate. I've had food poisoning from that. I can't remember whether I knew about the vitamin C at that time or not, but I've used it probably for curing food poisoning, because some of my infections are probably caused by food poisoning. Now, when the king, Artaxerxes, showed the riches of his glorious kingdom for 180 days, and when these days had come to the full, the king held a banquet for 7 days for all the people that were found in Shushan, the castle, for the great as well as the small, in the courtyard of the garden of the king's palace. There were linen, fine cotton, and blue. Let me sit up. Sit up a little bit. And blue held fast in ropes of fine fabric, and wool dyed reddish purple in silver rings and pillars of marble. Okay, there was wool dyed reddish purple in silver rings, and then a separate thought, there were pillars of marble, couches of gold and silver upon couches of gold and silver upon a pavement of porphyry and marble and pearl and black marble. So it sounded very lavish and luxurious, this banquet, right? Didn't it? So let's continue reading. Little children, and there was a passing of wine to drink in gold vessels. Now, we wouldn't necessarily be drinkers of wine ourselves. In fact, I don't believe that alcohol has any beneficial effect on the brain. In fact, it has a negative effect on the brain. And in fact, the brain is very sensitive to these things, even though it's been believed in France, for example, that wine was beneficial for the heart, or on the heart health. It might be beneficial, but it's not beneficial for the brain, so why would you do anything that was harmful to the brain? It comes back to you later on in life. In gold vessels, and they passed wine, and the vessels were different from one another, and the royal wine was in great quantity according to the means of the king. Of course, back in those days, they didn't have as much knowledge about the brain. As regards the time of drinking, according to the law, there was no one compelling, for that was the way the king had arranged for every great man of his household, to do according to the liking of each and every one. So they evidently didn't have to drink wine or anything at any particular time. Also, Vashti, the queen herself, held a banquet. No one was compelling the drinking of wine, it seems like, in verse 8. Also, Vashti, the queen herself, held a banquet for the women. Vashti was the queen, and the banquet she held was at the royal house that belonged to King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes. On the seventh day, when the king's heart was in a merry mood with wine, he said to Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abagtha, Zithar, and Carcass, the seven court officials that were ministering to the person of King Ahasuerus, to bring Vashti, the queen, in the royal headdress before the king, to show the peoples and the princes her loveliness. For she was beautiful in appearance, but Queen Vashti kept refusing to come at the king's word that was conveyed by means of the court officials. At this the king grew highly indignant, and his very rage flared up within him. And the king proceeded to say to the wise men, having knowledge of the times, for in this way the king's matter came before all those versed in law and legal cases. And those closest to him were Karshina, Shethar, Admetha, Karshina, Shethar, Admetha, Tarshish, Merez, Marcina, and Memucan, seven princes of Persia and Media, having access to the king, and who were sitting first in the kingdom. According to law, the king said, what is to be done with Queen Vashti, because she has not performed the saying of King Ahasuerus by means of the court officials? To this Memucan said before the king and the princes, it is not against the king alone that Vashti the queen has done wrong. It is not against the king alone that Vashti the queen has done wrong, but against all the princes and against all the peoples that are in all the jurisdictional districts of King Ahasuerus. Vashti did not come when she was called. For the affair of the queen will go out to all the wives, verse 17, so that they will despise their owners in their own eyes when they say, quote, King Ahasuerus himself said to bring in Vashti the queen before him, and she did not come in, end quote. Vashti did not come in when she was commanded. And this day, verse 18, the princesses of Persia and Media who have heard the affair of the queen will talk to all the princes of the king, and there will be plenty of contempt and indignation. If to the king it does seem good, let a royal word go out from his person, and let it be written among the laws of Persia and Media, that it may not pass away. that Vashti may not come in before King Ahasuerus, and her royal dignity let the king give to a companion of hers a woman better than she is. And the decree of the king that he will make must be heard in all his realm, for it is vast. And all the wives themselves will give honor to their owners, the great as well as the small. And the thing was pleasing in the eyes of the king and the princes, and the king proceeded to do according to the word of Memucan. So he sent written documents to all the king's jurisdictional districts, to each jurisdictional district in its own style of writing, and to each people in its own tongue, for every husband to be continually acting as prince in his own house and speaking in the tongue of his own people. That's the end of Esther chapter 1. We've got a couple of minutes left. But it looks like if we can do two chapters of Esther on two of our days, in the upcoming days, we can complete the reading in a considerably shorter time than we'd originally intended or thought. So, I mean, we can, there's some shorter chapters of the book of Esther. But they won't be coming up immediately. But we might be able to continue to read Esther along with Nehemiah in such a way that by the time we finish Nehemiah, we might be also exactly at the time when we can finish the book of Esther and thus complete our Bible reading. And we had 8 chapters of Nehemiah, I believe, was it? Well, we did 5 today, didn't we? 6. Let's see. 5. And 6 to 13 is 8 more. We've got 8 more. So 4 more days would be April 30th. And then the first 3 days, it won't be long if that's true. Is that true? No, I can't divide by 2. What am I doing? It's still 8 more days. I was dividing by 2 for the book of Nehemiah. Yeah, it's 8 more days. It's 8 more days. It looks like 8 more days. And, you know, there's 9 more chapters of Esther, right? And we've got 8 more chapters. So we might only have to do 2 of the books of Esther. We can do the last book of Esther together with the second last book, because the last book is very short. The last chapter, I should say, is very short. Very short. So we shouldn't have to do anything different, I don't think, because there's only 8 more if we do it that way for the book of Esther, 8 more days. And the book of Nehemiah is, we'll be doing from Nehemiah 6, I believe, to 13 now, which is 7 and 1 is 8. 8 more days, right? Yeah, it's going to be working out fairly conveniently, I think, if we do it that way. That's all. We've reached the end of our study. It's April 29th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 18:47 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.